You're listening to Caring for Cleft, an audio series that tells stories of comprehensive cleft care. Caring for Cleft is brought to you by the team at Transforming Faces. It is hosted by Executive Director Hugh Brewster.
Sí, claro que sí. Tengo un amigo que se llama Carlos.
I had a patient who is now a friend named Carlos. He's 26 years old now. He came to us as a patient with many difficulties, including speech clarity and aesthetics concerns, as well as palate fistulas. It was a result of having undergone around 8 surgeries through his childhood at various missions in Bolivia. In his adolescence, his classmates and teachers made him feel excluded, and he even faced physical abuse until he changed schools. When he came to Aininacuna, we started working with him to identify how we could best help him. Surgery wasn't an immediate option. The surgeon had to explore possible solutions to his complex situation. In the meantime, we focused on his adaptation and skills development. Carlos joined a music class, he learned to play the guitar and became a great guitarist. Despite his speech difficulties in those early days, embracing music helped his confidence.
Cleft lip and palate isn't an easy diagnosis for any parent to receive. Beyond the acute initial challenges in feeding your infant, how can you not worry about the stigma they may face? Will they be forever excluded from living a full life? I recently traveled to Cochabamba, Bolivia, where an innovative cleft care team takes the social and emotional toll of cleft to heart, with stories like that of Carlos as confirmation that their holistic approach leads to a hopeful future. In contexts where even basic access to safe and effective cleft surgeries is limited, psychosocial support, or in other words, addressing the emotional, social, and psychological aspects of cleft, isn't often prioritized. But emerging clinical research, as well as the experience of cleft teams in low and middle income countries, or LMICs, suggests that this element of a comprehensive cleft care approach may indeed be a key to unlocking full rehabilitation for children in LMIC situations worldwide. I wanted to learn more. First up, we travel to Bristol, UK, where the Centre for Appearance Research, led by Dr. Nicholas Stock, is the world's largest group focusing on the role of appearance and body image in people's lives.
So children born with cleft typically tend to realize that they are perceived differently. When they start to hit the age of around 7 to 8 years old, they become much more self-aware and they become aware of how they're perceived by others. And so this is when they might become aware that they look different from their peers. As they grow older, they may experience challenges in the workplace. They may have challenges finding a romantic partner. And they may have questions around starting a family due to the partly genetic causes of cleft. Hi, I'm Dr. Nicola Stock. I'm an Associate Professor of Psychology at the Centre for Appearance Research, which is based at the University of the West of England in Bristol in the United Kingdom. Working in cleft happened as a bit of an accident. So I was working at the Centre for Appearance Research at the time, this is probably about 13 years ago. A slightly panicked Professor Nicola Rumsey ran into the room and explained that she'd completely forgotten that she had a book chapter due in less than 2 weeks on cleft lip and palate, and could I possibly assist her in writing that chapter? So of course, I very diligently set about learning absolutely everything I could about cleft lip and palate, and specifically the psychological impact of cleft. And I was absolutely fascinated.
Dr. Stock isn't alone in unexpectedly discovering the world of cleft and subsequently having it move toward the center of their personal and professional pursuits. Julieta Vita Guzman, who shared Carlos's story with us at the top of the episode, also did not initially have cleft care on her professional radar. But now, seeing children overcome cleft limitations is her passion.
My name is Julieta Vita Guzman. I am the director of Aininacuna Fundación para la Salud based in Cochabamba, Bolivia. I am thankful to share information from my part of the world. In the Bolivian context, resources are limited and I hold a dual role. I serve as a director, but also as a psychologist because my background is in clinical psychology. I specialize in providing children and families with psychosocial interventions and guide them through the cleft care process. I started my professional career at the age of 22. Domestic violence and disability issues were my focus early on. I was actually a candidate to become a nun at a religious order that manages a psychiatric hospital here. Eventually, while practicing professionally, I joined an Inakuna, having never heard of cleft. I had no idea what to expect.
With her commitment to supporting women and children on the margins, Julieta was well-positioned to be a cleft care leader. I asked her if she remembered the first time she saw someone with cleft.
Yes,
I remember perfectly. It was the 16th of October, 2006. A young patient arrived from the rural Chapare region outside Cochabamba with a bilateral cleft lip and palate. It was a horror because it was one of the most complicated diagnoses of cleft. The child was already quite big. He was 2 years old at the time, and when he ate, all the food came out of his mouth and partly through his nose. That's the first time I saw a patient with cleft, but also with this diagnosis. It really weighed on me.
For many people, seeing a child with an untreated cleft lip for the first time can be a jarring experience. For Julieta, initial shock quickly transformed to compassion and then evolved to building a model of care that would help to see these children thrive. I asked her to describe how an Inakuna got off the ground.
At an Inakuna Foundation's beginnings, more than 20 years ago, we started treatment of clefts by only offering surgery. At that time, we thought that attending to a child with good surgery was enough. As we journeyed, we have realized that surgical intervention is a very small but important part of a child's full rehabilitation. When a child is born with a cleft in Bolivia, there are huge differences compared to more developed countries. The basic needs are simply, well, different. Here, families face completely different challenges trying to navigate the grief they feel learning of their child's condition. Education and familial support are a must. Often, there is a total lack of knowledge about cleft. We are still a country where traditional beliefs, including myths, play an important role in our culture.
These traditional beliefs can include that the birth of a child with cleft in a village is a bad omen. Surely the crop yield will be poor as a result. This is a stigma that is heavy for parents to bear. When an Inakuna got its start, they shared the common conviction that cleft care primarily revolves around surgery. To this day, many Bolivian families affected by cleft wait for treatment until foreign volunteers host a surgical mission. In this model, children and families are gathered from across large distances in the hope of receiving treatment during the volunteer's stay. Though for a variety of logistical and clinical reasons, there are always families who attend a mission but aren't able to receive the surgery they are desperate to secure. An Inakuna has chosen skilled surgeons from Cochabamba to join their year-round cleft team. And I was interested to learn more about Julieta's observations about the differences between local comprehensive cleft care and mission model care.
Bueno, las diferencias son abismal.
Well, the differences with missions are abysmal. At a comprehensive cleft care center, families receive information, support, and a full circle of long-term care. Comprehensive, locally available, ongoing care supports children. A simple example of this is helping children understand and accept the presence of scarring from cleft surgery, and also that cleft is a process. Missions are short events, and after them, there is a whole other story. It leaves an absence of educational and emotional support for the family and the child. There is no follow-up treatment.
This whole other story of follow-up treatment in which an Inakuna specializes has several components. The first is directly linked to the surgery. What if a complication arises for the infant in the days or weeks after the mission volunteers have returned home? To whom can families turn? Other follow-up components, which surgical missions cannot provide, include ongoing speech therapy, oral and orthodontic health, and supporting children's full inclusion in school. The An Inakuna team is able to build trust and offer support to families from the moment they hear the cleft diagnosis onward. In meeting with teenagers affected by cleft in the rural areas around Cochabamba, one thing that really stood out for me was how everyone, without prompting, mentioned teasing and bullying as a major challenge about their experience of school. I asked Julieta if school-based bullying was a widespread concern among families that Anina Kuna supports.
Sí, es muy común.
Yes, it is very common, especially now where aesthetics and beauty have become globalized. Now we have access to all the social networks and platforms that shape our perceptions of beauty. Bolivia, being such a small country, so remote, is recently affected by this.
So against a backdrop where bullying because of facial differences like scars or because of unclear speech is common, what has Anina Kuna learned about offering support to older children?
That it is essential. We have started small peer support groups focused on dynamic intervention. We build discussions around their personal interests as a way to capture their attention. The support groups are designed to resonate with their life, allowing them to share their experiences. We are still learning because we want this to work, primarily to connect with them and make a positive impact on their lives. We will learn from each other. I am confident about that.
While Julieta and the Anina Kuna team is breaking new ground with peer-based support groups in Bolivia, Dr. Stock has been closely following the role of psychosocial care within the support offered to families affected by cleft in the UK.
So at the Centre for Appearance Research, we are really fascinated in the role that appearance plays in people's lives. And cleft is a condition which affects appearance, and it's a condition which is visible to others. So we're really interested in how that plays a part in that person's psychological well-being, but also their social experiences as well. I think if we go back a few years, a few decades even, it was the research in the UK and in Scandinavia that first recognized that there is a psychological impact to cleft, that families and individuals were struggling with various psychosocial challenges that weren't being addressed. And so one of the major things that our research has contributed to is the reorganization of cleft care in the UK. So now cleft care is centralized. We all work kind of under one roof. Everyone is a specialist. Once we had psychologists in post in cleft teams, we then had to work out what their role would be and how they could best contribute. So since then, a lot of our research has been focused very heavily on understanding what the psychosocial impact of cleft is on families and individuals who are affected, and the types of outcome measures that we might use in terms of screening to identify those who might be most at psychosocial risk.
While access to psychosocial care specialists is now common for cleft teams in the UK, Anina Kuna is a pioneer in Bolivia. Yet especially in a resource-constrained context, Julieta believes that supporting psychosocial care must be a team commitment.
Todos deben conocerlo.
Everyone must know it. Nursing, social work, even administration that deals with numbers. Communicating good information, anyone can do it. Everyone is capable of asking questions like, how are you feeling today? What do you feel inside? And how I can help you? So these are very simple things that everyone on our team starts with while training. For a child, they are not aware that they have cleft until they are made aware. For the family, they must process trauma and come to terms with cleft. That's why we focus a lot on ensuring all staff are prepared and open to discussion.
Most of the studies that the Center for Appearance Research draws upon are rooted in Europe or North America. I wanted to better understand Dr. Stock's perspective on building up a base of research from LMIC contexts like Bolivia.
The majority of research that has been conducted has been done in high-income countries, and we can't assume that those findings would apply in an LMIC context. That's not to completely disregard what we know from high-income countries, because I think it is a fantastic foundation. But what I would really love to do, if somebody gave me all the money in the world, I would love to go into different low middle income countries and really start from the ground up to really start to understand the patient experience, the family experience, to talk to the health providers about what they currently do, what works, where the gaps are, what they feel needs to be done in to be able to improve psychosocial care in LMIC contexts. And then to begin to apply that in terms of training, in terms of identifying what outcome measures might be most appropriate and what interventions and resources might actually be most effective in that particular setting.
Ainina Kuna shares a passion for increasing the evidence base for psychosocial interventions. In partnership with Transforming Faces in the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, they are piloting the use of a recently validated outcome measurement tool called CLEFT-Q. This focuses upon children's self-reported outcomes about their CLEFT treatment.
El autoexamen.
As practitioners, we want to engage in self-assessment of our actions. As clinicians, we can't default to saying that everything is perfect, right? But hearing from young people through an instrument that is more objective, well, that is different. Questions like, how do you perceive yourself? What do you think of your scar on your lip? What do you think of your nose? Do you like how you speak? Then we can ask ourselves, how can we modify these surgical procedures? How can we use speech therapy to better serve patients? And so much more. This first-hand information is truly important to us because it is direct and real. It's not just a questionnaire. It's an instrument that will later allow us to design new methodologies and protocols and make corrections.
In Bolivia, as in many LMIC contexts, CLEFT care is largely funded through NGO partnerships. In many cases, these NGOs are primarily motivated to provide safe surgeries alone, with little support for long-term comprehensive care. I was interested to hear Julieta's perspective on this.
Well, I would like to show them the family context so that they can identify that there are helpful processes and that these processes are initiated by psychological work. They are methodological. Also, a lot of the time we adapt to the direction of international NGOs. Sometimes these directions are not effective for our context in Bolivia. And sometimes they are only interested in the surgical aspect. If we had the opportunity to speak on an equal level, we could share our experiences and explain why it must be tailored to our environment. For example, before surgery, there is orientation on nutrition and lessons on good hygiene. We have seen that in Bolivia, many of the kids get sick with diarrhea and infections because there is a lack of awareness and understanding of proper handling of the baby with a cleft. Actually, not just with cleft, but overall hygienic practices. So hygiene is a crucial training component when working with parents. Breastfeeding is another critical aspect to help mothers with so that we can ensure that mothers know how to prevent aspiration. So if I had the opportunity to speak directly, I would say that the path has more steps ahead, not just the surgical part.
Dr. Stock concurs that an expanded CLEFT NGO commitment to LMIC research in general and to psychosocial care in particular would pay dividends.
NGOs can approach this problem, I think, from multiple angles. I do believe, and of course I would say this, that one is to support research, because I think we really do need to have a good understanding of what the challenges are in terms of the psychosocial experiences of patients and families. How do we best identify people at risk? How do we best address psychosocial issues once we've identified them?
I asked Nicholas Stock what current research might indicate are helpful ways forward for both NGOs and local CLEFT teams.
So in an ideal world, there would be a psychologist integrated into every CLEFT team around the world, but we obviously know that resources are limited and that that's not a likely outcome anytime soon. So we do need to try and to implement some strategies in the interim. I do think it is the responsibility of every team member to foster positive psychological well-being in the families and patients that they see. Some of the ways that health providers can immediately begin to address psychosocial issues, they can talk to the family as soon as possible after diagnosis. they can provide verbal and written education about cleft lip and palate. It's really important that they show empathy, that they sit and listen to the challenges that their families want to speak to them about. They can reassure the families that cleft is not their fault. They can think about the family's environment in terms of housing, food, transportation. What are their more holistic needs? We know that connecting families and patients to local or international support organizations can be really effective in terms of that shared peer experience. We can also teach patients to practice confident communication in order to cope with other people's reactions and assumptions about their condition. We can make sure that the information we give is consistent. We can try to work within the community as well. So, for example, with schools, to make sure that the patient is actively engaging in the classroom. And really importantly, we can involve our families and patients in the treatment decision-making process and balance the risks and benefits of any treatment with the motivations and expectations of the family and of the patient to the way that the family and the individual perceive the cleft and the impact that it will have on their life going forward.
A bright and hopeful future for every child affected by cleft also animates Julieta and the Anina Kuna team. I asked Julieta what advice she has for other LMIC teams seeking to better address the psychosocial concerns of the families they support.
It's important to talk to the family and say, for example, that this process will take 5 stages. This is how long it would take, and our end goals are as follows. We must lay it out in a way that is clear and important for families to commit to. When families know what the goals of these orientation sessions are, they commit. When we do things blindly and say, we are going to do this and that, and the family doesn't know why, they don't give it the importance it requires. So for all areas in our experience, clarity and seriousness in plans are important. I do this in speech therapy. I explain the surgical plan in psychosocial care too. We treat it as a journey with an end destination. On that route, there is the medium term and the long term. So I think that is the most important thing when you are starting psychosocial processes, turning subjective plans into objective ones.
In closing, let's return to Carlos, whose story we heard at the start of this episode. His cleft journey was tortuous. Multiple ineffective surgeries within the mission model, aesthetic and communication difficulties, and intense bullying at school. Finding a local comprehensive cleft care provider that treated his psychosocial concerns with the same seriousness as addressing his speech, surgical, and oral health challenges made all the difference.
Ahorita es un chico que brilla. Cualquiera que lo ve.
Today, he shines. His story is remarkable. Turning a limitation into an opportunity to develop resilience and adaptability, he is eager to help and to share with other youth with cleft. Carlos is a shining example of someone who has overcome discrimination, isolation, and speech challenges, making a positive impact on others. He enjoys sharing tips with younger patients and mentoring them to help them on their journey. He even participates in our events and fundraising activities. He has adapted to his environment and developed resilient behaviors that weren't there before through psychosocial care.
He's a talented and resilient young man, eager to mentor other people affected by cleft and to share his hopeful perspective for the future. Both Dr. Stock and Julieta invite us to study examples such as these and to expand our understanding of what a successful treatment pathway for cleft can entail. For NGOs like Transforming Faces, this requires a commitment to learn in collaboration with partners like Anina Kuna, as well as supporting the development of tools and good practices that will inform how to pursue comprehensive cleft care around the world.
Caring for Cleft is brought to you by the team at Transforming Faces. It is hosted by Hugh Brewster, produced by Christian Weix and Danica Robertson, and edited by Sahil Ali. We extend our gratitude to our special guests, Julieta Vita Guzman, and Dr. Nicholas Stock. To learn more about Comprehensive Cleft Care and Transforming Faces local partnerships, visit transformingfaces.org.